Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. There's a photo hanging on the wall in an interior hallway on the club level of Hard Rock Stadium. It's a large black and white photo of Dan Marino in action. He's taken the snap from center, dropped back into the pocket, and looking downfield to throw the football. It's January 1985, and the Dolphins are playing the San Francisco 49ers in Super Bowl 19. In the background of the photo, out of focus, is the crowd in the opposite end zone. Tom Garfinkel jokes that he's one of those fuzzy gray smudges in the background. Garfinkel was 15 then, growing up in the Bay Area. He and his dad scored tickets to the game. It was the first Super Bowl to be played in the San Francisco area. Next year, Garfinkel will host Super Bowl 54. He's now the vice chairman and CEO of the Miami Dolphins and Hard Rock Stadium.
We've got a list of, you know, millions of dollars of projects still to do to try to really enhance and finalize and do some things to the stadium to make it even better than it already is.
The stadium was blamed for Miami missing out on hosting a pair of Super Bowls earlier this decade. After the millions of public tax dollars spent on Marlins Park, the Dolphins were shut out of getting tax money to help fix up the stadium, which was then known as Sun Life Stadium. Dolphins owner Stephen Ross tried to get help with fixing up the stadium by increasing the hotel's sales tax or reducing the stadium's property tax bill, but he could not find the political support. Ross committed then to paying for the renovations himself, with some borrowed money from the NFL, and the Miami-Dade County government agreed to pay incentives to the Dolphins for landing big events, like $4 million for a Super Bowl. We'll have more on that later on in the program. Now, all the wheeling and dealing and construction worked. In May of 2016, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell nonchalantly announced the decision by NFL owners.
Okay, we have a winner. Congratulations to South Florida. They will host Super Bowl 54.
Super Bowls are great for your community because of the amount of business it brings.
That's Rodney Barreto. He's the chairman of the Miami Super Bowl Host Committee, a role he played in 2007 and 2010, the two most recent Super Bowls in Miami.
You know, my staff kind of tempers me every once in a while because I always say, you know, the game sometimes is not really that well good. But really, it's all the people that come to your community, they enjoy seeing our community. And we're a totally different community 10 years ago from 2010.
The last time Miami hosted a Super Bowl, South Florida and the rest of the nation was just emerging from the housing collapse. Regional unemployment was almost four times higher than today, and the community was still angry over the public money promised to build Marlins Park. For what it's worth, one thing that hasn't changed the last time Miami hosted a Super Bowl, the Dolphins. They were 7-9 last season, just like they were the season leading into the 2010 game. But for the Dolphins stadium business plan, the 2020 game is validation of its strategy, according to CEO Garfinkel.
It started with really wanting to create, you know, what I call a global entertainment destination, as opposed to just a football stadium or you know, a football/baseball stadium. And what we've done is it starts with the seating products. So I think a lot of the stadiums that were developed in the past were developed with essentially three different products that you sit in a seat next to two people, a cushioned seat next to two people, or a 20-person suite. And we really wanted to differentiate that.
The stadium in Miami Gardens has undergone a $550 million renovation, from the seats to the four spires towering over the area holding up a roof canopy. But it's not ready yet for a kickoff a year from now.
Give us an idea of what some of that list looks like. If somebody from the outside is going to pass by here on the turnpike most weekdays between now and Super Bowl Sunday of 2020, what's some of the work that needs to get done?
Well, there's a lot of finishing details and touches to do. You know, I think we built pedestrian walkways, for example, in the parking lots. And so we're landscaping. We're going to landscape those a lot more. We've got over 37,000 new trees and shrubs here on the grounds. Got over 225 acres of land here, and the landscaping's quite extensive, and I think we're going to enhance that even further.
The stadium may be closer to Broward County than the Miami city limits, but this Super Bowl 2020, it is decidedly a Miami Super Bowl. The original bid was labeled South Florida, but Miami-Dade Mayor Carlos Jimenez insisted it should be Miami. In his official statement released when the game was awarded, the phrase South Florida only appeared in the headline, not in the actual statement. The statement itself said Miami. And the host committee this time is the Miami Super Bowl Host Committee. In 2007 and 2010, the group went with the South Florida description. Rodney Barreto has served as chairman of all the groups.
The Super Bowl is too big. Miami-Dade County cannot handle the Super Bowl. We're going to need our counties north of us to participate, and we work really close with them, and it's going to be good. They're going to benefit. They're going to benefit just like we're going to benefit from this. You know, there is no line when it comes to, I know we got a county line, but there really is no county line. No, the people who come visit us don't know that.
The business of the Super Bowl may spill over county lines, but the branding will be all Miami. So, still to come, beyond the lure of a renovated stadium, the promises and money needed to bring the game back.
They asked and we said no. We took a hardline stance and said, here's what we've done in the past, this is what we'll do in the future, and they were okay with that.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. You can follow our program on Twitter. Let us know your thoughts. Our handle is at WLRN. Hosting a Super Bowl is not a cheap date. In 2009 and 10, the Regional Super Bowl Committee raised over $6 million in cash to help host the 2010 game, according to tax records. In 2006 and 7, it brought in about the same amount of money to help plan for the 2007 Super Bowl. The deal Miami put in front of NFL owners 3 years ago included more than $40 million in cash and in-kind contributions and incentives to organize the game. So where does all the money come from? Rodney Barreto is the chairman of the 2020 Miami Super Bowl Host Committee.
A couple of different areas. We're going to be the state of Florida, local governments, and private money. So,
what's the contribution from the public in that budget, in that $40 million plus?
We're still working on those numbers.
The same day we spoke with Barreto in early January, the Miami City Commission okayed its budgeted payment of $500,000 to the host committee. A decade ago, Miami-Dade County wrote a check for $1.5 million to help. But the funds raised by the host committee are not all in cash form.
What we're doing is it's going to be a combination of, when you say 40 million, it's not all cash. Some of that will be cash, but a lot of it's in-kind services like police and fire and garbage pickup and transportation help. So that'll be some of the monies that are needed for that. But some is not dollars. It's just in-kind services.
And those add up for local governments. For the 2010 game, Miami-Dade County donated $3.2 million worth of services. That included $2 million for police services, $300,000 for fire, almost $50,000 for Vizcaya. The NFL is known for driving a hard bargain with host cities. According to the Star Tribune newspaper, for the 2018 game in Minneapolis, the league demanded that it not have to pay all kinds of taxes, that it should be exempt from sales and payroll taxes, for instance. And if the league or the teams had to pay, the local host committee would have to reimburse it for those taxes. Now, in advance of this year's game in Atlanta, Georgia legislators passed a law so Super Bowl ticket buyers won't have to pay the state sales tax on their tickets. Florida already does the same thing. So back to our conversation now with the Miami Host Committee Chairman, Rodney Barreto.
What kind of guarantees are in the bid for the NFL? I know that host cities tend to have to guarantee a certain number of hotel rooms, parking. There's got to be obviously law enforcement and fire protection, those kinds of things. Are those stipulated in the guarantee with the NFL?
So, yeah, there's a lot of different stipulations in the contract. What some of them, we do have a hotel block, but those are not free hotels. They're paying for them. We just lock them in.
Who's paying for them?
The NFL.
The NFL is paying for them because it's for their personnel.
It's for their personnel or it's for their sponsors. So what you do is you lock those hotel rooms in at a certain rate. And so that, and by the way, those hotels.
Is it a market rate?
It's a market rate. And by the way, those hotels tack on some money for the host committee. And we get a little bit of feedback from them, which helps the host committee. Remember, the host committee is a not-for-profit group of private business people that are doing this for the community. So
it's several thousand hotel rooms, isn't it?
Oh, it's the block is 15,000 hotel rooms.
So, and are those hotel rooms exempt from the hotel sales tax?
No, they're not exempt from sales tax.
So, because that's the main generator of funds when it comes to local governments, of course.
The state of Florida gets that money back. You'll see a bump in the sales tax of the state of Florida on a Super Bowl.
So the NFL is not requesting an exemption from hotel taxes,
no.
for instance.
No.
What about any other sales taxes?
No, the only exemption they have is for the sale of tickets.
So they didn't. There's no exemption of any other kind of tax, either paid for a local government or to the state government.
That's correct. They asked and we said no.
You said and yet they said no. They're still sending the Super
no.
Bowl here.
Yeah. So when we put our proposal together, they asked, and I said, no, we're not going to do that.
Other cities have made that offer.
They have. And, you know, that's their prerogative. But we took a hardline stance and said, here's what we've done in the past. This is what we'll do in the future. And they were okay with that.
Were those types of tax exemptions in the 2007 and 2010 agreements with the NFL that brought the Super Bowl here, and they were excluded from this agreement?
Well, no. The only exemption that they've ever had was the sales of the tickets.
In the winning bid that Minneapolis put together, there was a phrase that appeared more than 60 times: "At no cost to the NFL."
Right.
Have you seen that show up a lot more frequently?
I see it, but you know, one thing we've done is we've had our own phrase too put in.
Which is
this is the total amount we will pay, period. So
put a ceiling on it.
We put a ceiling on a lot of things, and I think that helps. That protects us. We're not an open checkbook, by no means. And you know, listen, the city, the county, the state of Florida all recognize the exposure they get out of this. So you look at it. So the last Super Bowl, 30-second commercials, $5 billion. So we're going to probably get about Miami. South Florida, Florida is going to get probably about $100-150 million worth of exposure. When you have 5,000 press from all over the world here, this game being televised to over 100 countries, it's going to be, it's enormous. And I think what's happened is, and the reason Super Bowls have gotten so competitive is all these other cities have realized, you know, what we've known all along, that Super Bowls are great for your community. And it brings a lot of business. It starts right at your airport. Now you have Uber and Lyft. So before it used to be the rental cars. It's become a little, it's shifted a little bit. And then, of course, all the hotels, the restaurants, all the transportation that's needed, all the entertaining that goes on. So it's just an incredible multiplier for the business. Some of these hotels, they make their whole year on Super Bowl.
As far as the hotels are concerned, you heard Super Bowl host committee chair Rodney Barreto mentioning the NFL needs 15,000 rooms for the game next year. 4,000 of those will be in Broward County. Hotel spending plays a big role in trumpeting the economic benefits from bringing the Super Bowl to town. In Minneapolis, for instance, an analysis of its 2018 game found accommodations, hotels, and peer-to-peer rentals like Airbnb accounted for 30 cents of every dollar spent by someone visiting for the game. In all, the game was estimated to have made a $400 million net economic gain on the Twin Cities. That's according to an economic analysis prepared for the local host committee there. Now, Super Bowl economics is not straightforward. Previous games in Miami have had an economic impact ranging from about $250 million to $450 million. The 2007 game, for instance, was economically more successful than the 2010 game, according to reports from the Sports Management Research Institute. Its analysis pointed to the booming economy in 2007 and that both games featured the Indianapolis Colts, so the second time around maybe wasn't as interesting. But there are plenty of critics of Super Bowl accounting. They point out most of these economic impact figures are generated through organizations with skin in the game, like host committees and visitors and tourism bureaus. There's a version of what economists call the substitution effect. Does Super Bowl spending simply replace spending that would take place anyway? It's just spent on the Super Bowl instead of something else like a dinner and movie. There's the crowding out effect. How does a Super Bowl draw visitors away from one location to another? For instance, does the game in one part of Florida hurt tourism and spending somewhere else in the Sunshine State? There's also leakage of the economic impact. This is the idea that businesses profiting from the Super Bowl bump aren't headquartered here anyway. Then there's the question of gross versus net impact. This is a big one. Even when the Super Bowl isn't in Miami in early February, South Florida, turns out, remains a popular place for tourists. Going back to 2010, a Super Bowl year, hotel occupancy in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties routinely is over 80% in February. And February is commonly one of the highest-priced months for hotel rooms here. This is according to data from STR, a data and analytics specialist. According to the Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau, Super Bowl Sundays bring in big, big bucks for hotel rooms. The average revenue per available room for the night of the 2007 game in Miami was over $322. That's up 150% from a year earlier. For the 2010 game, the average revenue was about $300 per room, up 170% from the year before, which, of course, was on the tail end of the Great Recession. Now, except for New Year's Eve, three of the highest revenue nights for Miami hotels in 2010 were during the Super Bowl. Back to our conversation now with Miami Super Bowl Host Committee Chairman Rodney Barreto.
In late January and February, hotel occupancy in South Florida is already high. 80%+ of hotel rooms in a normal late January or February are occupied with average daily rates around $200, for instance. What's the Super Bowl going to do to that? In other words, what's the Super Bowl bump above what normally would be happening in the tourism industry in January and February?
Well, first of all, what's going to happen is we're going to bring probably about 150,000 people to our community. Who normally won't come. First of all, the stadium only holds 65,000, okay? But you have so many people who travel with this the number one sporting event in the world. They come here. It's corporate America at its best. They're entertaining their top clients.
But what's the net effect, not the gross effect? Because 80% of those hotel rooms in a normal February weekend would be filled up without the Super Bowl.
I think the net effect of that is that people are going to be paying more for a hotel room. Okay, yeah, you're right. On a regular like right now, if you went to go rent a hotel room, and it's $200 a night, and it's Super Bowl's coming to town, you know, this time next year, that hotel room is not going to be $200 a night. So that's the net effect.
And what about, you know, the corporate ownership of those hotels? Many of those hotels aren't owned here necessarily, but how does that increase in that average daily room rate get realized, I guess, in the local economy as opposed to just brought back to the corporate owner?
Undoubtedly, these hotels have got to staff up. It's going to create a lot of jobs. There's a lot of entertainment going on in a lot of dead space in these hotels. So in those lobbies and those rooms are all being filled. There's a huge multiplier effect. I mean, we hired a PH economist out of Broward last 2010, and her study came back was north of $400 million. And I know people argue that number, you know, left and right. But I always
gross or net.
Yeah, and I always go back to the fact that just look at the exposure that we're going to get, and then you're going to expose.
But the argument, though, Rod, is does Miami really need exposure in January and February?
Sure it does. Let me tell you why. It's we're a different city. We're a totally different city. When people come to our community now, they say they're at awe. We already act like a mini New York, but we now look like a mini New York, okay? But the amount of people come here, and there's a reason why we're the cruise capital of the world, correct? And then people come here and say, oh my God, I didn't realize Miami was this pretty. And now you look at every executive chef across the country who wants to open a restaurant in Miami. So, I mean, yes, I think Super Bowls are part and parcel that make you a sexy city. And I tell most people, I said, Miami's not the hottest city in America. It's the hottest city in the world.
Miami Super Bowl Committee Chairman Rodney Barreto. Now, still to come as our conversation continues, the difference a decade has made in hosting the big game.
In the past, the NFL wanted us to spread out the Super Bowl activities. So we had events going on in Dade. We had events going on in Broward. We had events going on in Miami Beach. We had events going on in Palm Beach County. What they found that is actually doing a Super Bowl park and bringing all the activities into one area is much better for them. It's not the NFL of 30 years ago or 10 years ago. It's changed.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson. A year from now, when the Super Bowl returns to Miami, it will represent several milestones. It will be the 100th anniversary of the NFL, the 11th time the game has been played in Miami. It will be Rodney Barreto's 6th game and his 3rd as chairman of the local host committee.
The Super Bowls have changed dramatically in the last 10 years, and they've gotten that much bigger and that much more sophisticated and that much more. Heck, listen, we used to do a deal with the NFL on a handshake and get a contract after the Super Bowl left.
We spoke with Barreto in his Coral Gables office.
If you can believe that.
Is that right?
That's true.
When the days of the Orange Bowl.
The days of the Orange Bowl, yeah.
So you host the game with just a...
On a handshake. And then after they left, the contract would show up. I mean, it's amazing. It's just, that's how much they have changed. So it's not the NFL of 30 years ago or even 10 years ago. It's changed.
What's different for the 2020 incarnation for you?
In the past, the NFL wanted us to spread out the Super Bowl activities. So we had events going on in Dade. We had events going on in Broward. We had events going on in Miami Beach. We had events going on in Palm Beach County. What they found that is actually doing a Super Bowl park and bringing all the activities into one area is much better for them, and it's much more exposure.
Unlike recent games, the 2020 festivities will be centered in Miami-Dade County. 10 years ago, the NFL held a big Super Bowl Eve concert on Fort Lauderdale Beach. There were two nights of concerts on Miami Beach a few days earlier. For 2020, the NFL's Super Bowl live events will take over Bayfront Park and even a couple of lanes of Biscayne Boulevard. Barreto walked us through some of what to expect and why.
We're basically activating the whole park, and including Biscayne Boulevard, and we're going to build believe it or not, a temporary dock, not the whole length of Bayfront Park, but a portion of Bayfront Park. So it's going to be something likes that no one has ever seen in Bayfront Park. But it's just going to be a beautiful chance for us to show off this great city. And in Bayfront Park, now with all the new buildings, the buildings act as a beautiful backdrop to an event. And we're going to have murals on those certain buildings. And we're going to have more than the dancing lady on the Intercontinental Hotel. And so it's going to be fun. We're very excited.
How much of this was driven by the NFL's trend to concentrate the kind of Super Bowl fan experience in and around stadiums or host cities? And how much of it was driven, frankly, by politics of Miami-Dade County, the stadium in Miami-Dade County, some of the financial incentives that are attached to hosting a Super Bowl from the county to the Dolphins organization?
Well, certainly I have to compliment Mayor Jimenez, who has been very, very supportive, and he has driven some of this by when he negotiated with Stephen Ross. When Stephen Ross invested those dollars, the $500+ million that he's put into the stadium, which has made it a world-class stadium, which has allowed us to get Super Bowls again. And through his efforts, the mayor's efforts, and Stephen Ross's efforts, we're back at it. So, yes, the mayor has mandated that we put things in Miami. The teams are got to be in Miami. The NFL headquarters has got to be in Miami, and so that's what we're doing. Now, our neighbors to the north of us, Broward and Palm Beach, are still going to benefit. We have hotel blocks up there that we're going to be using all the FBOs. We're going to be using the
FBO is
fixed base operations. All private aircraft. We'll have a lot of private aircraft that comes in for Super Bowl. Then obviously in downtown Miami are all the free concerts, the activation.
Walk me up what Biscayne Boulevard is going to look like in late January, early February of 2020. First and foremost, it's going to have a name change. It's no longer going to be Biscayne Boulevard for a week or so.
That's right. It's going to be called Super Bowl Boulevard. And we're just going to put all kinds of activations there with hopefully a Hail Mary zip line. We're going to do all sorts of different activations.
So if we start on Biscayne Boulevard, Super Bowl Boulevard in February 2020, down at the Intercontinental Hotel, and we move north, this is the area where we're going to have all of the fan experiences that are generally associated around a big Super Bowl game. and you mentioned, but it also is celebrating the centennial of the NFL.
That's correct. So we'll have the NFL 100 boardwalk. We'll have the NFL Hall of Fame. We'll have the different, the Legends Amphitheater. We're going to have all sorts of different activations. We were going to have,
getting ahead of yourself.
I can't reveal it all yet.
Okay, fair enough. But I want to go north of Bayside here. And if we go up to the museum campus, we get to the AAA where the Heat play, right, and move on to what's now the museum campus with the Frost Science Museum, right, and the Perez Art Museum Miami. What is that going to look like?
And now the new Maurice Ferre Park. But actually, we had that slated for the NFL experience, and now we've moved that NFL experience over to the Miami Beach Convention Center. And the reason we did that is because the NFL has experience in other cities that keep it in a facility, a covered facility. They have no problems with any kind of weather issues. So that works for us.
The NFL experience is essentially a temporary football theme park open for the week leading up to the game. Now, in 2007, it was set up right next to the stadium. In 2010, it was replaced with a game day fan plaza at the stadium, but that meant you could go only if you had tickets for the Super Bowl. Beyond the fan experience is the business the Super Bowl represents. For the past several years, the NFL has tried to answer criticism that smaller local companies can be left out of any Super Bowl bump when the game comes to town. The league's Business Connect program aims to qualify small businesses to work with it. In order to be involved, a company has to have an office in South Florida, be majority-minority, women, veteran, or LGBT-owned. Super Bowl host committee chairman Rodney Barreto says hundreds of companies already have been registered to participate for the 2020 game.
Years ago, when we worked with the NFL, we kept communicating to them that it was important that that local companies had a piece of the pie. And so certainly for me and my background, I deal with a lot of elected officials. So when you have a minority majority, they had basically told me, hey, we want to see small companies, whether they're Hispanic, female, or African-American owned, we want them to get a little piece of the pie. So we've worked with the NFL over the time, and then Business Connect kind of developed. You know, you don't need to bring your big logistics companies from California or New York here. We got talent here. You know, you need carpenters and electricians, they're here. You need, you know, staging, we have it. You need flowers, you need caterers, we have those. And so I think that they realize that, yep, you know, we can do it locally. I mean, heck, limousine companies will come here. They'll bring limousines from all over the southeastern United States to be here for Super Bowl. It generates so much business. We already have 500 local minority firms signed up and qualified.
And then what happens to that once they get qualified and are on the list?
So once they get qualified and on the list, we have a mentoring program. We're going to close that list, that time frame soon. I believe it's in February. And then people from the NFL will come down. They'll talk to them how to do business with the NFL. They'll express to them that maybe if the job looks like it's a little too big for you, maybe you ought to team up with a like company. And so there's a lot of great little success stories that come out of this, and we're excited about bringing it. You know, listen, it's more than business. All 500 companies are not going to get a piece of the pie. So what we're going to do is hopefully there'll be an intangible takeaway. Maybe they'll learn something that, hey, maybe I better way to run my company, better way to partner up, better way to network with all these small companies, and so we can go after a bigger piece of the pie. So I think that those takeaways are just as valuable as getting a contract.
What does success look like for this program? If you talk about a $400 million or $500 million economic impact, I'm sure you'll do that study in late 2020 or 2021, and we'll see what those numbers look like. How much of that is going to go toward the minority and small business community for you to judge success rate for this program?
You know, I don't know the number, but we are pushing. We're doing our part, and we want the NFL to do their part. So I don't know that number, But it'll be a sizable number, and I think a lot of people will be very impressed when it's over with.
Speaking with Miami 2020 Super Bowl host committee chairman Rodney Barreto. Now still to come, when the environment and football collide.
Since we live between three national parks here, we're on the water, we feel that the emphasis on the environment is important to us.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy. Don't forget you can find a podcast of all of our programs by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. I'm Tom Hudson. Today we're talking about the Super Bowl returning to South Florida. After a 10-year absence, the game will be back in Miami a year from now. It will be the 11th Super Bowl hosted in South Florida, making it the most popular Super Bowl destination. Now, a lot's changed over those 11 games. The Orange Bowl is no more, the stakes are certainly a lot higher, and the recognition of the environment has grown. The NFL has had some type of environmental program attached to the Super Bowl for a couple of decades now. It started with recycling programs. The 2007 game in Miami was the first time the league went carbon neutral. It figured out the carbon emissions associated with the game. This is director of the NFL's environmental program, Jack Groh, speaking to NBR's All Things Considered in 2007.
Well, the two main sources are utility usage to power the stadium and some of the other large events, and then, of course, transportation emissions. And what we incorporated into that was just our ground fleet of about 3,000 vehicles, buses, vans, limos, and staff cars that move people all around the Super Bowl host community that week that leads up to Super Bowl.
Now, in recent years, the accounting of the game's carbon footprint has grown to include electricity beyond the actual game, like power at hotels used by the NFL. And the league has aimed for zero waste from the game itself, recycling what's left over at the stadium after the final whistle, donating leftover food, and repurposing other stuff from signs to construction material. In past Super Bowls, the NFL has purchased renewable energy certificates, planted trees, and used more energy-efficient technology. Rodney Barreto is as familiar with the South Florida environment as he is at hosting a Super Bowl. He served as chairman of the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission for 7 years while also leading the local host committees for two Super Bowls. He stepped down from the Fish and Wildlife post in 2011, but he's still with the local group responsible for helping host the game when it returns to Miami next year.
You know, typically the NFL, when they come to town, they do a carbon neutral. They have a whole carbon neutral plan, but we're going to expand upon that. Since we live between three national parks here, we're on the water, at least the Super Bowl lives on the water, we feel that the emphasis on the environment is important to us, and we're going to emphasize that. And so, and you'll start hearing things. We just recently got the Ocean Conservancy became a sponsor of the Miami Super Bowl host committee. We're getting ready to make a big announcement with them. So you're going to start seeing things progress here.
With your background in fish and wildlife in the state of Florida, has this been a specific focus of your? Have you driven this conversation?
Yes, and in fact, in 2010, we took a bunch of inner city kids from Dade and Broward fishing, and first time they ever been on a boat, first time they ever held a fishing pole, first time they ever caught a fish. We had some NFL, former NFL players. In fact, we had back then Dwight Stevens, who I encouraged, and the governor then put him on the Fish and Wildlife Commission, helped me with that event as well. We're always very sensitive. Mike Zimmer, who is our president, was the past president of a coral restoration group, and so we're all kind of sensitive to that. And you see the wave of what's going on in the community, in the country, with plastic straws and plastic bottles, and if you look at our beautiful environment, look at our bay, how blue the water is, and you say, boy, we're blessed where we live, and the Everglades is important, and so we're going to emphasize some of that, and we have a stage, and we have an audience that we want to talk to, and we're going to have the perfect message for them.
With that in mind, will the committee be pushing types of policies like paper straws and paper bags, no plastic bags, no styrofoam, no plastic cups, those kinds of things?
We're going to be we're in discussions with folks, and I'm getting ready to make an announcement of a chairman for the environmental committee, who's a very good name in this community, who's going to lead those efforts, and I'm going to let them kind of come up with the plan.
So nothing specific, but what do you think the vendor response is going to be to those kinds of initiatives that strike me as somewhat atypical when it comes to a sporting event here.
Yeah, I know. I agree. But I think if you look at the country and you look at some of the companies that are getting involved, they're being very sensitive to the impact of the environment. And that goes far and wide, and it's a big breath. And I think people are starting to pay attention to it. And we certainly here, you know, we got the sea level rise and all the different things in our community. You know, I'm not here to, you know, mandate something on somebody, but we're here to be sensitive, and we want to set a good example. So.
Is that a change compared to your other interactions with the NFL and bringing the Super Bowl to Miami?
It's not a total change because they've always had an environmental program. They have a tree planting program we've always been involved in. We just want to expand it a little bit more. So I think that as these things progress, people are now being sensitive. You know, it's funny, I was laughing not long ago with somebody. I remember growing up here in Miami, and we're driving down the street, and people would throw their whole bag of food out the window, you know, whether, you know, I don't want to name any local franchise, but it'll be all over the side of the road. And, you know, it's a whole education process. You rarely see that in today's world where someone's driving down the street and they throw a whole bag out. If they do, you hear 10 cars blow horns. So, I mean, you know, so it's a good thing.
Well, and as you mentioned, you certainly have a stage that is very unique that a Super Bowl brings to Miami. Your stage is literally going to be on the bayfront with your Super Bowl experience for fans. How are you going to take advantage of that when it comes to the environment for the local audience, for local residents?
So we're working with different groups, and we're going to lay out some. Remember, we're going to have maybe 1 million-plus people. We're estimating go through Bayfront Park, and so they're going to be able to see things that we're going to. Once we activate the message, they'll be able to see it.
Speaking with Rodney Barreto, chairman of the Miami Super Bowl Host Committee, the mix of business and the environment over the Super Bowl creates some interesting framing. The local host committee has to come up with millions of dollars in cash and in-kind contributions to help with the game. Most of the money comes from sponsorships, but the NFL is tough on who the local group can target to go after for the dollars.
NFL doesn't really make it easy for you. They have every sector you can almost think about sealed off.
Exclusivities in terms of sponsorships.
Absolutely. So you gotta anybody you talk to, you gotta go pre-qualify and pre-clear it with them.
Which may help explain why the nonprofit Ocean Conservancy is described as the Miami Super Bowl Committee's quote exclusive ocean partner, end quote. Still to come, the public money bonus and what else is at stake for the stadium.
We want to bring people down here and showcase the stadium and showcase South Florida and bring value to the economy down here. The only thing that would be better is playing in the one you're hosting and winning it.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, it's the Super Bowl returns to the Sunshine Economy. Thanks for listening. You can follow along on Twitter at WLRN and, of course, find a podcast of our program by searching iTunes using the phrase Sunshine Economy. Tom Garfinkel can talk the X's and O's of football. He can talk the P and L of business, but he can also sound like a cultural ambassador.
You know, I think Miami is a curator of culture for the rest of the country and in some ways the rest of the world. You know, art, music, fashion, food, and certainly sports.
Garfinkel is the vice chairman and CEO of the Dolphins and Hard Rock Stadium.
And, you know, we want Hard Rock Stadium to be a reflection of that.
Four tent-like poles poking up from the top of the stadium are the most public evidence of the $500 million in renovations to the stadium over the past 4 years. Inside, scattered around, are original works of art, an effort that was inspired by the street art in Wynwood. Now, the changes done to the stadium were all in hopes of landing a Super Bowl, and it worked. The game will return to Miami on February 2nd, 2020. After a few failed efforts to secure some public money for the stadium fixes, Dolphins owner Stephen Ross went ahead on his own. The stadium sits on public land, and there are incentives for landing big events. The Dolphins get, for instance, $750,000 for hosting an international soccer match as long as 55,000 people buy tickets. They get $2 million for hosting a college football semifinal game. A Super Bowl triggers a $4 million payment. The money comes from the county hotel bed tax as long as the money is available. Here's Dolphins CEO Tom Garfinkel again.
You know, the way that particular system works is we don't, you know, there's a marquee event grant that comes to us after the event takes place. We don't start receiving those. There's a cap on it every year of a little over $5 million. And this
is the money from Miami-Dade County that can come to the Dolphins.
Yes, that has the potential to. And it's based on, like, so if you know, there's certain grants that we get for hosting a certain number of events or certain types of events, and the Super Bowl is one of those, and it's capped a little over $5 million a year. But we don't receive that money until after we host those events and deliver those events. And if you think about receiving sort of $5 million to host a Super Bowl when we're, you know, if you look at Minnesota and Houston and others recently, there's studies, economic impact of over $500 million. So, you know, we're happy with that. We think that's a great thing. We don't start receiving that money until after 2025. So it really doesn't factor into the decision making. I mean, I think Steve decided to put up the $550+ million, you know, to do this, to make sure the stadium was going to be here and be a world-class global entertainment destination for decades to come. And that was the goal, and that's what we set out to do.
That grant you mentioned is recently negotiated a delay in even paying that grant from the county. The county and the Dolphins sat down and came to a negotiated agreement.
Well, it's actually not a delay. The way the deal was originally negotiated, it was actually scheduled to be paid not until 2025. There was a look in and an opportunity to pay it earlier, but it was originally scheduled to be paid at a much later date. So. And the look in to I wouldn't call it a postponement as much as the look in resulted in staying with the original schedule to pay it at a later date versus paying it earlier. And that was fine. That was the deal that we did. And you know, certainly, you know, no problem with that on our end. And we're happy that Miami-Dade County, you know, has been very supportive of us. And you know, I think what we're delivering here in terms of now doing a $71 million, you know, tennis center and keeping the Miami Open here in partnership with IMG, we're very excited about that this March. So we're trying to keep, you know, these events here in Miami. We're trying to add value to Miami and do wonderful things here that adds to South Florida and the people's experience. Some of these events have been fantastic, again, from Classico to U2 to, you know, now keeping Miami Open here.
What does the kind of investment look like for this coming year to get the stadium ready for the 2020 game?
It's in the multiple millions of dollars. I mean, again, when we've spent, you know, over $550 million, you know, a lot of that investment's in place. And so now it's just a matter of looking at the CapEx and really, you know, getting a list of a checklist of punch lists. Okay, we need to do this. We need to do this. Contingency planning on a number of things. We've got, for example, 5 water chiller systems that air condition the building. A lot of those systems are older. So, you know, it's doing a diagnostic on all of those, making sure, I mean, you know, the last thing you want to have is the air conditioning go out in the suite level or something, you know, during the Super Bowl. Okay, has it got 5 years left? Is it have 5 months left? We need to make sure we know that. Or I personally walk around and I might see something and say, well, that still looks like it's 30 years old. We didn't really do that right. Let's fix that. There's escalators and elevators that, you know, there's, you know, working with FPL on the power plant situation and the backup system and, you know, the lighting system. There's the audio visual, making sure we're getting the audio correct. And, you know, so all of those things, you know, for the most part, all the cabling, all the video boards, we've got an LED board here that's, you know, arguably past its useful life. We're going to replace that this off season. That's a few million dollars. And so there's just a lot of punch list things that we're doing to try to make sure we can get everything looking and operating as well as we possibly can. Right now, construction has just begun on 2 pedestrian bridges and 2 pedestrian tunnels So that, you know, currently the vehicular traffic gets held up by the pedestrian traffic, which kind of causes some log jams getting out of here after events. Those bridges and tunnels will help alleviate some of that to make it easier to get in and out. So we've increased the number of male bathrooms by 27%, females by over 70%. So the lines in the bathrooms don't exist anymore. The cleanliness, that we brought our house cleaning in-house. We brought our guest services in-house.
The fact that the CEO of the Dolphins knows the percentage increase of male bathrooms and female bathrooms tells me a little bit something about your management style, but it also tells me about how important data is in terms of addressing the fan experience.
Yeah, we look at we use a lot of data information, data analytics on the business to try to improve things. I don't like to wait in line. I don't think other people do too. So we try to study that around here to alleviate things so that there aren't lines at concessions and bathrooms and getting in and out and those things. I wanted to create an app for our season ticket members, for our fans, where they could just, you know, digitally purchase concessions, for example. And our technology team was trying to invent one. I said, no, just time out, just stop. Go download the Starbucks app. You know, they spent millions of dollars and developed this. This is the simplicity of what I want. Just duplicate what they did at Starbucks, and let's try to duplicate that here and make it very simple for people to use.
Is hosting a Super Bowl for the Dolphins cash flow positive?
We have some incentives in some of our sponsor contracts and things that helps us make a little bit of money, but it's not really a moneymaker for us. It's more, you know, a source of pride in the NFL, a source of pride for South Florida and for Miami-Dade County and the city of Miami. And I think more than anything, that's really why we want to do it. We want to bring people down here and showcase the stadium and showcase South Florida and bring value to the economy down here. And there's a lot of pride in hosting a Super Bowl. And the only thing that would be better is playing in the one you're hosting and winning it. But we're working hard on that too. So,
Dolphins CEO Tom Garfinkel. Now, what, you thought we would not talk about coaching if we talk with the CEO of the Dolphins? Well, on the coaching front, he didn't really have much to say. The team, of course, is reportedly expected to hire Brian Flores, but can't since he's the linebacker coach right now for the New England Patriots, and the Patriots are playing in this year's Super Bowl.
We're looking forward to getting through the Super Bowl here and getting a coach hired and getting going on that process. The interview process was rigorous and enjoyable, and a lot of great candidates and great people, and we're just waiting to be able to have another conversation and make an offer to a candidate. So until we can do that, the process isn't officially over, but I don't anticipate there being any more interviews between now and then.
That process may be over a week from today when Miami officially takes the handoff from Atlanta to host Super Bowl in 2020. We spoke with the Dolphins CEO Tom Garfinkel in a conference room attached to his office inside Hard Rock Stadium. Now, during our conversation, this happened.
The last 5 years that probably didn't exist prior. And
did you hear that during the pause there? Yeah, it caught both of our attention. Here it is. Listen to it in the background.
That probably
a late January thunderstorm there, right in Miami Gardens over Hard Rock Stadium. Not exactly the kind of weather Miami is hoping for when the Super Bowl returns in a year. You can follow us on Twitter, at WLRN is our handle. Look for a podcast of the program, of course. Search iTunes for Sunshine Economy. Pilar Ribe is our technical director. Polly Landis is our booking producer. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening.